A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on April 26, 1998, in the series Christian Faith, Interpreting and Experience, entitled, You Can't Fight It, Paul. The texts for the sermon are Acts 9, verses 1 through 19, and Luke 24, verses 44 through 49. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
All of the great religions of the world are founded on a foundational experience that happens to an individual or to a group of individuals. That foundational experience issues in a story. That story is full of metaphors, symbols, images, in which that foundational experience is given expression. And then eventually the story is scrutinized and probed, and out of that study of the story and its deeper meaning comes the conceptual ideas that form a religious system. And it's true of all the great religions, and it's true of the Christian faith as well. Judaism had its foundational experience in that exodus of that band of slaves from Egypt under the leadership of Moses. The Christian movement had its foundational experience in the realization that the crucified one was a living presence still. And I want you to see that the Christian faith, like all the great religious traditions, is the consequence of the interpretations of experience. Last week, Peter, in Galilee, ready to go fishing again, overcome by the conviction that the crucified one lives. And he went back to Jerusalem to say, "The Lord is risen." Next week, Mary Magdalene. This week, Paul. Peter, Paul, and Mary, a great trio for Eastertide, I thought. If it had been up to Peter, with his Easter experience sometime weeks or months after the crucifixion in Galilee, the movement of Jesus may have had a significant life for a time, as did really the Jesus Jewish movement a century or two. But it would not have become the universal religion, the worldwide religion that it is most likely. That fell to Paul. Paul was turned around in his tracks and became the apostle to the nations, or to the Gentiles, as he says. Now with Peter, we're dealing with one who loved Jesus, followed Jesus, a Galilean peasant. But just to show you the contrasting interpretations and experiences that went into the founding of the Christian movement, with Paul, we're dealing with someone quite other. We're dealing with an educated, sophisticated city dweller and world traveler. And we're dealing with one who was of the strictest sect of the Jewish observance, the Pharisees. He was committed and he was devoted. And he was in the hire of the temple priestly hierarchy for the stamping out of the people of the way. That's what the Jewish Jesus followers were called subsequent to the crucifixion and the experience of the living presence of Jesus, people of the way. And Paul was committed to the stamping out of that movement. So devout was he, and so narrow was he, convinced of the truthfulness of his orthodox Jewish position, seeing in Jesus and that movement a threat to that one way to which he was so devoted. And so Paul, on his way to Damascus in order to continue to create havoc among that fledgling movement of the Jesus people, has an experience of blinding light, hearing a voice saying, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Luke tells us that story in the narrative of his account of the unfolding history of that early movement, but then twice subsequently in chapter 22 and 26, he has Paul retell the story in his own words. So critical did Luke see that turning about of Paul, who we know as Saint Paul or the Apostle. For Paul, who was so committed in his observance of Torah as the way of life and righteousness, was absolutely turned upside down. And Luke, in telling the story of that early movement, recognizes that as Paul's foundational experience and Paul's interpretation of his experience as that which triggered the separation of the Christian movement from Judaism, the womb out of which it flowed. Paul, in his experience, he speaks of it as a revelation, as a vision. He speaks of it in his letter to the Galatians, the first chapter, 13 following. A revelation which came to him not through the mediation of any other person, not even Peter or the apostles. That revelation was for Paul a significant perceptual shift. Now, every preacher would wish that he could throw a switch and create in unison among his people a significant perceptual shift. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Some come dragging their feet, some get it right away, and frankly, some never get it. But when you've had an experience like Paul, when Ananias comes to him later, according to Luke's account, it's as though scales fall off his eyes. Well, that's a marvelous figure, isn't it? Because that's what's going on. With a foundational experience that turns our world on its head, it's like scales fall off our eyes, and all at once we say, "Ah, oh, I see it." That's what happened to Paul. And for him, it was radical. Much more radical than for Peter. For Paul, this was a total turnabout. Not a conversion. We Christians so triumphantly speak about Paul's conversion or Paul's experience as a model of conversion. Not so at all. Paul was born a Jew. Paul died a Jew. Paul, in his own defense before King Agrippa later on, says, "For the hope of Israel, I stand before you accused." Paul had one intention in mind, and it was to bring in the fullness of the Gentiles so that all of Israel and the nations could be saved. Paul believed he was standing on the edge of the end of the age. Paul's urgency to reach all of those nations, even to get as far as Spain, was because he believed that the Lord would return, the parousia would come soon, there would be the consummation of all things. He had to preach this gospel to all nations, and all nations, joined now with Israel, would be ready for the appearance of the Lord from heaven. Paul was never converted from his Judaism. Paul died a devout Jew. Paul was one who had a great hope for Israel and would have been pained had he known that he was actually the catalyst that led to the breakup of the movement, so that there continued after him, in the wake of all of this, a Christian movement as well as an ongoing Judaism. No, Paul was not converted from one God to another or one religion to another. Paul, simply in the midst of his own piety and devotion and his observance of Torah, saw something so stunning, so striking, so overwhelming, that he had to make some major adjustments in his understanding of his own tradition. And it was within that tradition that Paul's evolving understanding came about on the basis of his experience. The experience was foundational. Paul began to tell the experience, and in his probing and thinking about it, for some 14, even perhaps 17 years before he actually breaks on the scene again, he is seeking to understand the significance of the appearance of Jesus Christ in regard to the hope of Israel, the hope of his own tradition. Paul was the catalyst for the Christian movement on the basis of his interpretation of his experience that eventually forced a break with the very Jewish tradition that he loved and to which he was devoted. That's the irony. And I'm not going to go into that experience itself. It's familiar enough, it's clear enough. What I simply want you to see, that Paul was the critical agent whose experience, whose foundational experience, brought to expression, affecting a new interpretation of things, of all things, of God, of history, of humankind, human destiny, the meaning of life. All of that causing a significant perceptual shift that made him, more than anyone else, the founder of the Christian movement. Just think about Paul with me for a moment. Paul was one of those persons whose religion was compulsive. He was a driven person. He was a Pharisee. He was a strict observer of the law. And in his drivenness, it would seem that he was never able to find rest or peace with God. It is no wonder that Luther loved Paul, for Luther was one of those who, in all of the pious devotion of his priestly ministry in the Catholic tradition, could never find his peace with God. Paul was a person like that. And then he has this experience, this light, this bright light, whatever it was, he calls it a revelation. And he comes to a significant shift in his understanding of what it means to stand in the presence of God as a person who is righteous and blessed. Up until that time, it had been through the observance of the Torah. We translate Torah as law, and we can make it something that's legalistic, but it was not legalism. It was a way of life. And the Jews who celebrated, who observed the Torah, rejoiced in the Torah. Now for Paul, it was a burden. And he never attained that righteousness that gave him peace. And when he came to the experience of Jesus and contemplated the life and the ministry of Jesus and the death of Jesus, as he tried to put all of that together, he came to the conviction that it was not through the observance of the law or of Torah that righteousness was attained and one gained one's standing in the presence of God, but that one's standing in the presence of God was sheer gift. It was a gift of grace. It was received by faith and faith alone. And there was no other way to be at peace with God than through this understanding that life is gift, all is grace. We are received by God and given this present resurrection existence. Life now, not later. Life now in the presence of God. Life as lived in gratitude for the wonder of the world and the wonder of grace. That was Paul's experience. And that's what he formulated. And that's probably the thing that we think about most centrally when we think about Paul. Paul is the apostle of Protestantism, of course, the apostle of grace. Salvation by grace through faith. For him, that was quite a switch. And he makes numerous references to it in his letters. How he had done everything, dotted every I and crossed every T. And then suddenly in the experience of meeting the risen Christ, experienced grace, acceptance, freedom, joy, peace, love. Now I want to put a parenthesis in here. I know a Jew who would say, I observe Torah and I don't know what Paul was talking about, because I observe Torah and find in it supreme, sublime joy. I'm talking about Rabbi David Hartman. Beautiful human being. Exuberant human being. He revels in his Jewishness. He revels in the Torah. He finds himself grasped by God and celebrates in the presence of God by keeping Torah. And he would say, Paul, I don't know what you mean. That's not my experience at all. I think probably Paul was guilty of what we're all guilty of. That is, tending to absolutize our own experience. This is the way it happened to me, and it happened to me so dramatically and so vividly. And I am so certain of what happened to me that it must be the way it must happen for you. David Hartman, that's just one concrete Jew. But it is one concrete Jew in my experience who would say, Paul, your experience of Torah is simply not my experience of Torah. Nonetheless, we're preaching Paul today and not David Hartman. So, I'll go on. Paul was done with a performance principle. Paul lived by the sheer grace of God and reveled in it. That for him was an adjustment. It was a major adjustment within his tradition. Not Torah, but faith in God through Jesus Christ. And there was another adjustment he had to make, for he was a son of Israel, fully aware that Israel was the elect people of God, the special nation chosen to be a light to the nations. The election of Israel was foundational. It was a pillar on which the whole Hebrew tradition rested. Now, Paul has scales fall off his eyes, and he says, it's not just Israel that is elected. Israel elected in Abraham, but Abraham's seed is Christ, and now all are elect in Christ. That was a major adjustment again within the tradition. But it was enough of an adjustment that eventually it had to break the tradition. Paul began to see now, feeling himself called to the nations, that the grace of God that was an electing grace was for all people. Therefore, Israel, that had fulfilled its special function, was no more special. And now for Paul, a Jew of his day, who was a Jew naturally, was no longer elect unless he had faith in Jesus Christ. For Jew and Gentile alike, there was one way to come to God, and it was through faith in Jesus Christ. Well, you can see that there had to be a collision somewhere. Paul, as I said, would have been distressed if he had looked down the corridors of time to see that he was the agent that affected that split. But in the letter to the Romans, chapters 9 to 11, we can see the anguishing wrestling that goes on in Paul's heart and mind about why his brothers and sisters after the flesh, his Jewish brothers and sisters, do not see Jesus as he sees Jesus. One of the premier scholars of Christian origins and Second Temple Judaism, E.P. Sanders from Duke University, met him recently at a seminar. And he's done a lot of work in this area. And he points out that in those last chapters in Romans 9 to 11, Paul is evidencing some struggle with his strong conviction. Is Paul beginning to doubt himself? Because he says he begins to realize the tension. Deep down in him, he is a Jew and he believes and he knows that it was the historic Israel that was chosen. The election of God was for this people after the flesh of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Paul is one of them. He can't ever throw this off. He cannot conceive of the fact that God's promises will not be followed through. God must be faithful to God's word. This election of Israel must still be intact. But Jesus is God's entrance into communion, reconciliation, and most of the Jews are rejecting Jesus. How can Paul put it together? He can't put it together. He's anguished. He says, I would that I could be accursed if my brothers and sisters could only see it. They have a zeal for God, but not according to righteousness. Paul tries to figure it out, and then he comes to that anguishing image of the olive tree. The natural branches are ripped off, the unnatural branches grafted in. He comes to that rather, 2,000 years later, I'd have to say that rather silly idea that because the Gentiles are coming to God, the Jews will get jealous and they'll come to God, and then we'll have this wonderful situation where there will be the fullness of Israel and all of the Gentiles. God will have mercy on all. That's what Paul was about, because the end was coming. He was on the end of the age. He had to get the job done. God would still do it, he thought. If you could get the word to the Gentiles, the nations come in, that will trigger Israel's hand. They'll turn to Jesus. We'll have Jews and Gentiles all coming to Jesus, to God through Jesus. I think he was beginning to doubt that that was going to be the case, don't you? Well, wouldn't you? You go through all of your life in a strenuous ministry and you end up in a Roman cell and jail. You hope to plead your case before the emperor, but you know you're probably going to lose your head. I mean, didn't Jesus say, my God, why? Don't you suspect that Paul began to see that this that was so deep in him, this special election of Israel and God's faithfulness to that electing grace, and his other conviction that it was faith through Jesus Christ alone, don't you think he began to see how these things could not live together, and maybe he had gotten it wrong someplace? Don't you see the anguish of his soul as he tried to figure it out? Would you like Paul a little better if he really was beginning to doubt whether he had figured it out? E.P. Sanders says, if Paul could have lived for 2,000 years, and he could have seen that his idea of God's calendar, God's timetable was wrong, might he have changed his mind that access to God was through faith in Jesus Christ alone. If he could have seen that there would be a Christian movement and an ongoing Jewish community, if he could have seen the globe encircled by great religious traditions, might Paul have scratched the Jesus Christ? Might he scratch the alone? Might he have said, my experience of Jesus Christ has been saving, releasing, freedom-giving, wonderful. But I guess that God's got plans bigger beyond anything I yet dreamed of. E.P. Sanders says, if I was in a church assembly 2,000 years later that had to vote on the proposition of Paul, salvation through faith in Jesus Christ alone, E.P. Sanders said, I'd have to vote against that. And I suspect that Paul would vote against it too. I think he would too. Doesn't it upset you a bit that even the Apostle Paul might have been wrong? Don't you sit there and wish there was a book where it was all laid out? Don't you wish there was an apostle somewhere who knew all the answers? Don't you wish your preacher would finally get it straight? Trust me, he won't. There isn't such an apostle. There's not such a book. This is a story. It's our story. And we're still trying to figure it out like Paul was trying to figure it out. Would it be enough for you to admit that Paul was wrong about the calendar and all the coming together of Jew and Gentile and the time and the coming again of Jesus and all of that? Would it be enough for you to say, you know, he was wrong about that, but the thing that he did get right is that life is a gift. To be lived before the presence of God was sheer wonder. That finally, it is not a religious system, it is not a series of religious propositions, it is not a creedal tradition, it is not an institution. It is nothing but that kingdom that is within one, that dawns upon one when scales fall from one's eyes and one says, oh, I see it. Would it be enough for you to have such an experience and to revel in the grace and the freedom of such an experience? Not at all sure that the rest of the world will ever duplicate your experience. But not really worrying about that, but thanking God for all of those who have witnessed to the reality and the possibility of authentic human existence in the presence of God, who is full of grace, who sets us free to follow in the steps of the Master. Well, that's enough for me, and that's probably all you'll ever get here. That's the interpretation of my experience, which is triggered by Paul's experience, which is triggered by that foundational experience of the crucified one, whose living presence is still experienced and transforming. Thanks be to God.